But we are at Yeshiva University, and Yeshiva University is not just Mada, but it's Torah Umada. And while the science and the ethics are applicable to the entire Jewish population and the entire world population, we at Yeshiva place ourselves under the yoke of Halacha and Torah. And to the credit of the Torah, which is ever growing and expanding, the Torah always has something to say, even on such modern topics as cancer genetics. So it's my privilege to introduce Rabbi Mordechai Willig, a Rosh Yeshiva at the Rabbein Yitzchak Elchanan Yeshiva.
Thank you very much. There are three issues which halachists consider this very sensitive and difficult topic. The first, should all women in the Ashkenazi Jewish community be tested for the BRCA gene? Is it a prohibition? Is it an obligation? Does it lie somewhere in between? We have heard that 1 in 40 Jewish Ashkenazi women are afflicted with this particular problem. It seems to me that from a strict halachic perspective, it's difficult to consider this to be an absolute obligation to check for a 1 in 40 chance in this kind of a situation. Nonetheless, I believe that it is certainly permissible. You would not view this as somehow wounding for an insufficient purpose. Just taking a little blood is permissible for an individual who feels that she, or as we've heard before, he, should be tested for the BRCA gene. This is for the general Ashkenazi Jewish population. What about a case in which there is a relative who either has BRCA or who has breast cancer? So, as we've heard, if a first-degree relative has a BRCA gene, there's a 50% chance that another family member, first-degree, will have it. And this kind of a situation, I believe, one can suggest an obligation to test if, as a result of the testing, something will be done to save lives. And as we have heard, and I will repeat, things can be, in fact done. If a first-degree relative has cancer, breast cancer, but has not been tested, so then it's difficult to have specific scientific data, but depends in significant measure upon the age of the onset of the cancer, and if there is more than one in the family, as we've heard before from the good doctor. The statistics go much higher if there's two close relatives who have it. So then once again, it seems to me that it's appropriate for such testing to take place. Nonetheless, we have a halachic principle called Shomer Pesoyim Hashem, which is found in the Talmud in a number of different contexts. Hashem watches over those who are simple individuals. And the question is, when do we apply this principle and when do we not? For those who are halachically minded and have some halachic grounding, I'll just suggest one source to look at, an excellent source, a footnote in a encyclopedic work by Dr. Avraham Steinberg, who has been here at this medical ethics conference before. He refers to it in his article about smoking, which is in Hebrew is Ishun, The footnote he refers back to is in his piece on Miniat Hereyon, contraception, which he goes into various criteria when we do or do not apply the principle of Shomer Psoim Hashem, which indicates that we're not required to avoid certain situations. It seems to me, based upon some of the sources he quotes and others, that this principle only applies if the danger to life is a minority. If the danger to life is a majority, which means that there's a more than 50% chance that life will be shortened, then the principle of Shomer Psoim Hashem would not apply. Hence, the conclusion, which is not a topic for today, that smoking is prohibited by Torah law, since recent evidence has it that a person who smokes has more than 50% chance of shortening his or her life. Therefore, the permissibility of Shomer Psoim Hashem, which was invoked by earlier rabbinic sources who weren't aware of the situation, which wasn't yet known to the scientific community, this will no longer apply. In our circumstances, one has to take into account the whole series of statistics, which I'm sure the experts can furnish. Someone who has a BRCA, we've heard about a startling number of 82%, that some have said if you have it, you're going to get it in your lifetime. And then what the chances if you could get it, will you be cured? You put it into a whole system and you'll discover, based on the 50% rule, whether it's completely mandatory to do this testing or whether it's just a good idea without a formal halachic obligation. In either event, my view is that it certainly should be done for someone who has a first-degree relative with BRCA. If one has two close relatives who've had cancer, even if they haven't been tested, they should have been, but they haven't for whatever reasons of their own. I want to emphasize, it was told to me by an expert doctor, talking about family history of who can be tested, that today they can even test from the dead. If they have some genes with DNA, that's also something which should be kept in mind. It's not known to the general population. Then it certainly should be done, the testing. What do you do after that? So that's a question. What do you do after that? Even if you let's say, have the BRCA gene, that's the next part. Again, the first halakha question was, should there be testing? The second, there was testing. You're positive. What do you do about it? What do you do about it? What does the halakha say what you should do about it? It seems that there is a series of things which can be done. The first, as we heard, I'm repeating what was said before, but just emphasizing from a little bit of a halachic perspective, is that, in my view, testing in this kind of circumstances is critical. And again, as was mentioned briefly, the testing for a BRCA-carrying individual, the medical community suggests, is different than in the general community. I'm a firm believer that in the general community, mammograms, annual mammograms, which are recommended by the doctors, should certainly take place. I've spoken about it from my pulpit on numerous occasions. But someone who has the BRCA, I'm told, the mammogram is certainly important, but there's even a more specific and accurate test called an MRI, which is not done for the general population, certainly not, but for BRCA carriers, presumably would be able to lead to earlier detection. And therefore, it should be done for someone who has a BRCA gene. Therefore, for that reason alone, just the change in the type of test which is being done, this is itself sufficient reason to make it halachically appropriate to test for the BRCA, just to be able to have this extra caution in the screening process. In addition, there was an unfortunate link, as we heard before, between the BRCA gene and ovarian cancer. Spoke to a number of doctors who told me that generally, and we're not talking about any particular case, generally the idea of removing the ovaries, oophorectomy, is something which can save many, many lives. And in most cases, does not need to take place that early in life, given, again, the medical facts that have been told to me. I was told that one could wait till past the age of 40, again, generally, to undergo this, and it seems to me that although normally for the general population we are strongly against these types of operations which prevent further childbearing. Nonetheless, given the high risk, of a life-threatening disease, which is otherwise almost impossible to detect early enough, in my view, this operation is halakhically indicated. It's hard for me to use the word absolutely mandatory, because it depends upon percentages again, but halakhically indicated. And therefore, I think that this is yet another reason for BRCA testing to be done, because if a person is tested, yes, they can have their children. We'll come to the genetic component momentarily. But after they're done having their children, and most women in our community are done having their children by that, generally by the age of 40 approximately, they can take this step, which again, although it's normally a distinct prohibition to engage in these types of surgeries, which make a person no longer able to have children, male or female, but this is an exception to the rule, because it could be a life-saving procedure. And we have a general rule of pikuach nefesh overriding practices which otherwise would be prohibited. As far as the mastectomy is concerned, there's a lot of literature about it. Again, my doctors have told me that although it's certainly a medical option, and a woman can certainly consider it, that in many cases, again, everyone has to consult her own physician, in many cases, the MRIs, if done frequently enough, can be relied upon to provide sufficient protection. But again, every person is different. If an individual woman feels that she wants to have this surgery, this mastectomy, in my view, it's halakhically permissible once again. There's no violation of a chavala, of a wound, for no purpose, because there is a purpose in the mind of the patient. And halakha does give significance to the attitude of a particular patient in these kinds of situations. And if she feels that way, it would be a permissible operation, maybe even a recommended operation in certain limited circumstances. But again, the screening, which should be done in a more vigilant and significant way for carriers, and the oophorectomy at a somewhat later age, these are in and of themselves, even without the possibility of mastectomy, halachic reasons for this screening, for action to be taken for those who have the gene, and therefore ample reason for the screening to take place in general, especially for those with a higher risk based upon relatives having cancer. Now to the final part of this presentation. Genetics, as we know, is associated with childbirth, with marriage. And the question is, does the halacha demand that an individual reveal to a prospective marriage partner a genetic history? It's an excellent question. How far do we go with this? So once again, we go back to our Shomer Psoim Hashem principle, which we had suggested would not apply in a case where there's a 50% chance of something. My view is that, generally speaking, if there's a possibility of a test which is not invasive, which presents no significant statistical threat to life, that it certainly should be done even in the absence of that 50% rule. I do not believe we should rely on Shomer Psoim Hashem in all circumstances. And this is true in other screenings which are not the topic of today's presentation. Let's talk about, just to give a background, talk about colonoscopies. I think it's something which should be done in the way in which the medical community suggests it, depending on your age and family history. As the case, maybe a person shouldn't be closing eyes and say, well, look, I looked it up on the internet and there's less than 50% chance that I have it, so I'm not obligated to have it. I think that's not wise. I think that these things certainly, these tests certainly should be conducted. I'll refer you to an article by someone who is an expert in mammography. His name is Dr. Shalom Buchbinder, wrote an article in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society about this very point, this kind of genetic, this kind of preliminary screening and testing. The unfortunate part of the article is that he was unable to gather a halachic consensus from the great rabbinic figures who were downplaying and poo-pooing any such idea. Some were even saying it really shouldn't be done for all kinds of reasons, which I frankly don't fully fathom. I subscribe to the view, which is in that article attributed to Rabbi Schechter Shalita, that these tests should be done. It's a halachic requirement that they should be done in accordance with what is proposed by the medical community at large, because it can preserve life, it can save your life, and there's really very little downside to justify not doing it, not following what the doctors are telling you to do. We do have an attitude that we should apply the principle of Shomer Pesachim Hashem here as well. In particular, it is said, because in the Talmudic instances, the principle is applied even when you're doing something, how much more so should it apply to tell you, well, just don't do anything. As we call it in our language, shevi al tasa, do nothing. There is evidence to the contrary. In a celebrated response of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in a somewhat different context, but nonetheless, it has to do with genetics. It's a famous tshuva about Tay-Sachs. He very squarely teaches us that that's not true. A person has no right to say, well, I'm going to close my eyes and I have bitochon in Hashem and all that kind of stuff. Please, I advise you to look in the tshuva by Hagon Rav Moshe in Evan Ezer, Chelek Dal. I believe it's the two tshuvas about this topic in the Sefer. And you will see that I think it's Simon Yud, where he says that, no, this testing should be done, and as we all know in our community, it is done. If it haven't done it yet, you should do it. Done in different ways, I'm not going into that right now, but it certainly should be done. Well, as we've heard earlier, references to comparisons between BRCA and other types of Ashkenazi Jewish diseases, which are also 1 in 40, and I heard it mentioned briefly earlier. And therefore here too, there is certainly a reason to do it. Of course, there are always differences. They are the fatal diseases. Here, they are diseases which are potentially curable. But nonetheless, from Rav Moshe's tshuva, you do see that testing is appropriate. And we have no right to make an automatic assumption that, in general, we can just say, do nothing and close our eyes. Now, what must be revealed to a potential marriage partner? This is, of course, a very significant topic which goes beyond the particulars of BRCA. Great rabbinic decisors have given advice, both orally and in print, to their questioners about these matters. And they seem to have some measure of dispute, even in terms of how obligatory it is to reveal. There is a remarkable responsum, if you will, by the stipler of the Kehilas Yaakov, who was not known for his responsa. It's in his book on Masechta Yevamos, that's learned in the yeshivas in the Talmudic realm. It has to do with a case, of not a health case, a case of someone who was who had a non-Jewish father and had difficulty finding a shidduch, even though he was a Jew. We follow matrilineal descent. And he was told to go to a faraway place and just sort of, no one has to know who his father really is. And the stipler asks the question, isn't this disingenuous? Isn't it devious? He's not revealing what the facts are. Don't we have so many gemaras that tell us in even much smaller areas of life, in selling a house or selling a car, you have to reveal any flaw. It would be prohibited to hide these things. This is the question that he raised, a very serious question. His answer is striking. His answer is, of course, if you're selling a house and a car, you have to reveal every flaw, because if no reason to have to buy your house or your car. There are 100 cars, 1,000 houses, just the same. However, when it comes to shidduchim, he argues, no two people are the same. And therefore, there's no obligation to reveal every single flaw that you as a man or a woman have when you're considering marriage. Of course, the question then becomes, you don't have to reveal any flaw? That's too far. So the criterion that he has is an amazing criterion. He says, the only time you have to reveal the flaw, if the flaw is so serious that the spouse, when discovering it after the marriage, would walk out and ask for a divorce. That is a high standard. That is a high standard. I was told by a woman who herself asked my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik Zichrono Livracha about whether there was a requirement to reveal a gene, a very serious gene, Marfan syndrome. Very serious gene. Not going into that now. That's not our topic either. And she said she went with her rabbi to Rav Soloveitchik, who said, no, you don't have to reveal it. End of the day, the woman revealed it anyway. The boy, who was a student of mine, broke up the engagement as I got into the middle of it. Interestingly, in the Tshuvas of Rav Feinstein Zatzal, is a question about Marfans, and he says, you absolutely must reveal it. However, it's arguable that these two luminaries were not necessarily arguing. In the Rav's case, it was just a gene. The person was completely healthy at that point in time. In Rav Moshe's case, which is found in Igros Moshe, again, Evan Ezer Chelek Dalet, Simen Ayin Gimel Osei, there was already, the sickness really existed. There were symptoms, and there was his, he didn't see well, and there were others. A lot of the details I don't have to go into now. So it's a possibility that in revealing, we make a distinction between someone who was actually ill presently or someone who has a gene which may or may not make the person ill down the road. That is, I'm saying it as a possibility based upon these rabbinic decisions that are downplaying the need to reveal. In another tshuva of Moshe, he has an amazing tshuva, remarkable, incredible, in which he writes that a woman who has never had a period, and she's 20-something years old, and that's a serious problem of, obviously, of fertility down the road, is not required to reveal it. But she has to accept upon herself that if a case treatments won't work to be in 3 years, she will accept the get voluntarily. That's a landmark tshuva, which I'm sure others would disagree with. But I'm just giving you an idea how our great rabbis are sensitive to the needs of individuals to get married, and they don't jump to tell you to reveal everything. This is the same Igros Moshe who's told us, you have Marfans, you absolutely must reveal it. That's arguably because it's already a condition as opposed to a future predictor. We don't know exactly what was going through the minds of our great rabbinic leaders of the past generation. Just to bring you to the idea that it is a very serious halachic question. And yes, as was mentioned before, a man who has the BRCA gene has the exact same chance of passing it on to a daughter than a woman, a 50% chance. So it's very, very tricky. There are those who have taken upon themselves not to check themselves, so they shouldn't have the knowledge, so they shouldn't have to reveal it. Well, that's an interesting way of thinking. On the one hand, okay, knowledge is dangerous. On the other hand, just to inform individuals of who are thinking this way, if indeed there are close family members who have breast cancer, and the decision is taken not to test in the interest of shidduchim, it can in fact backfire. There can be individuals who may presume incorrectly that the particular young lady who has this close relative who has cancer is a BRCA carrier and will stay away. So, you know, it's a gamble. It's Russian roulette. If you a negative test will help you, a positive test, if you're going to be honest about it, which you should, will hurt you. But, you know, it seems to me, if up to me, I would advocate for the individual who has a close relative to be tested and to say it to the individual that she's going out with that, in fact, she's positive. When? I don't believe it should be said at the very beginning. Because if you say it at the very beginning, then it's very hard to get a date. I mean, put it on your CV, on your shidduch email that I get. Please don't put it there. The only time, in my view, you have to reveal something up front is if it's obvious to you that the average individual who knows this from the beginning up front is going to say no. So why go through the dating process? It's just not fair. But here, there are many men who would be willing to go out with a girl despite this shortcoming, genetic shortcoming, this genetic marker. And I believe, therefore, that you should wait. Till when do you wait when it comes to these things? Again, my position on this matter is you wait till the midpoint. What is the midpoint? It's like a half-life. What is the midpoint? So that depends which part of the Orthodox world you come from. Is it 2 days? Is it 2 weeks? Is it 2 months? Whatever it is. But approximately then, I believe, that this gene should, this BRCA issue should be revealed at that point in time. My time is up, so I thank you very much for your kind attention.